Jean. Okay, just to chat while I'm doing this about the your A4 sheet of handwritten notes. I've been chatting a bit to colleagues who've been doing this for several years in the past in their exams, and my impression is you may well find it's well worth doing, because the mere exercise of compiling that sheet, thinking what you want to put on it, that will probably be itself an excellent exercise in helping you to understand, think about course material, getting you to understand it. So there's a plus side in preparing those. I think, of course, I think, exam advice. Here we are, IADS exam advice. How about this? I probably want to open this with okay, so Mary's talked about how you prepare for the exam. I'm going to, we didn't actually confer in advance in what we were going to say, so we thought it would have been more interesting to see whether we say the same things or not. But I think what I've prepared quite nicely complements what Mary says. So this is advice on how you actually sit the exam, actually taking the exam itself. So here's my advice. This is just based on the years of experience of marking exam scripts and seeing what students tend to do, what they could have done better. So, in my experience, that's what this acronym means, okay, by far the biggest cause of losing marks in exams is simply not attempting all the questions. Okay, that's far and away the biggest reason people's marks are low. When students do try to attempt questions, they normally pick up some marks, perhaps not all of them, but you know, it's not an all or nothing thing. We do give marks for partial understanding. We're looking for ways to give you marks. So it's not guaranteed. There have been occasions when someone's written half a page of stuff and really can't find anything to give marks for. But most of the time, you know, if people attempt a question, they will get some marks. So show. Even if you don't think you can do it all, show us what you do understand. So don't just leave it blank. Try and do something for all the questions. Now, this is perhaps a more personal thing. I'd like to just think about whether this works for you. So many of the questions will have sort of what's supposed to be an easier part at the beginning, and then progressing on to a harder part. Okay. So some students, it's clear that they sort of conscientiously work through the questions in order, and perhaps if they get bogged down in one of the harder parts, that takes up quite a lot of time. So consider whether it might work for you to approach the exam, as it were, breadth first rather than depth first. In other words, go through the whole paper, get the low-hanging fruit from each question, get the easy parts that you think you can do, then, you know, go back and look at some of the harder parts. And maybe a slightly personal thing, because that might depend on how comfortable you feel with context switching. So the downside of that is you have to, you know, switch context more frequently from one question to another. I personally find context switching a struggle, so I'm not sure how much I would put this advice into practice myself. But have a think about it. It's a possible strategy, and my impression from having done marking is if more students did adopt this low-hanging fruit strategy, the marks might be a bit higher. Okay. Having said that, you'll see that the booklet's laid out with allocated pages for each question. Do please try and observe this. Put your answers in the right place so that they're all together. Makes it much easier for us when marking. If you put stuff in the wrong place, we kind of figure it out eventually which question you're trying to answer, but puts us in a bad mood. You don't want to do that. Okay. And from your point of view, you know, if you have it all the solutions on the same page, all parts of the solution to one question on the same page or together, you're far more likely to see whether they fit together or don't. Okay, so please do try hard to observe, to take note of what's supposed to go where, particularly if you're answering questions in a non-sequential order. Okay, now here's quite a big thing, and it's an easy thing, but this could save you quite a lot of time. Don't waste time copying out information that's already there in the question, okay? There's no point, there's no marks given for that. We know what we've asked you, okay? You don't have to write self-contained solutions that would be, you know, intelligible by themselves, standalone solutions that would be intelligible by themselves. That's very good practice in a lot of contexts, but in an exam, it only needs to be intelligible to us. So we know what we've asked you. So, for example, here's a question from a past exam. Which of the following three statements are true and which are false? You need not justify your answers, okay? So for that, it would be enough to write, okay, you want to write the B here to show that it's part B of the question, so we know what it is. If you just write false, but we're not asking for any justification, so it's quite enough to write false, false, true there, okay? You don't need to copy out N plus 1 is little o, N plus 1,000, colon, false, blah, blah, blah. Okay, and sometimes people do much longer things. They write elaborate long sentences that are just copying out parts of the question. It's a simple thing, but just don't do that. It's a waste of time. We know what we've asked you. You only need to write, we're looking at 300 of these things, so we get pretty good at, you know, knowing what we're looking for, getting the key, extracting the key information from what people write. Stuff on this slide, this is probably the most important advice for the exam as a whole. Now I've got some slightly more specialised advice that applies to more mathematical style questions. And this isn't really exam specific. This would apply for any mathematical question. Perhaps have you got pen and paper questions coming up in coursework two?
Mary? Yeah.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would apply in general. Okay, so use a small number of, don't just write mathematical symbols. If we're asking you for a proof, a logical argument, you need a small number of English words to show the logical structure of an argument. So here's a question from the first tutorial sheet. Show formally from the definition of little o that 100 n cubed is little o of n to the fourth. So from my experience, this is a bit of an exaggeration, but students in the exam will sometimes write something like this. So you see they've just written the mathematical symbols, and each of these equations or inequalities, they're just sort of floating freely in space, okay? No idea of how they connect up, okay? So when you write C greater than zero, does that mean, you know, we know that C is greater than zero, that's the thing we know, or do we say, let C be greater than zero, we choose a C that's greater than zero, or are we saying, suppose C is greater than zero, and see what happens, or are we saying, we'd like C to be greater than zero, okay? If we've just got this free-floating stuff, it's very hard to see whether you understand what the structure is. And this may, I don't know, you can tell me, this maybe comes from school-level maths, where in school-level maths, you really do typically only write, you know, mathematical symbols. You're maybe not expected to write English words. So instead of that, write something like that. Just put these more crucial little English words in to articulate the logical structure of your argument. So given any C greater than zero, we're supposing someone's given us a C greater than zero, then we choose the n greater than 100 C. So that shows clearly that the status of this second inequality is quite different from the status of the first one. And then for any n greater than big N, we can check this inequality. So do use these. This is general advice for writing math. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a follow-up that came up in some of the early tutorials. So it's not just about words, but sometimes when we've got steps, and we show something, and then something follows, and then something follows. So as well as words, there is the issue of these large imply symbols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hence, you can write in words hence, or you can write the double arrow going forward, but also be very careful with the direction of your arrow, because often those aren't right.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're exact equivalents, please make them double arrows. But often they're just not there at all. When I look at what people have written down, you know, when you're trying to show I have this thing, well, then I have this thing as well. And there's no words and there's no big arrow. So try to think about putting that in as well. It's an extra kind of logical structure for what you're doing.
If it's a logical argument, it has a logical structure, and that's what you want to show, so we can see. So that's one thing I think would help. Of course, this is the polished solution to this, once you've been through the... So the question here is, here we've picked a rabbit out of the hat. How do we know that this is the way to choose N, okay? So I've shown it here without the working that might have led you to this stage. This would, if you're confident you know what you're doing, this would be enough for full marks. We'd give full marks if we asked for this. But if you also want to, you know, as you're doing your rough working, include that as your solution, you know, talk us through the process of how you're picking this big N. And you'll see in the online solutions to this first tutorial sheet, you'll see how it's done that. That may be something we can give you marks for, even if you don't get the right answer at the end, because it gives you, you know, some understanding that you're heading in the right direction. Whereas if you just try the final solution and it's wrong, it's a bit harder to give you those partial marks. Okay. Now, there's also a point about writing maths where you as computer scientists may well be at an advantage, because there are concepts that you're very, very familiar with from programming that also equally apply when you're writing mathematical proofs. So you all know that if you use a variable in a program, that variable has to be in scope. Okay, that means you have to have declared or defined it before you use it. Now, of course, what in scope means, that means something slightly different in Java from what it means in Python. In Java, it's more static. You have to have actually a declaration for this variable before you use it. But anyway, you wouldn't use a variable that wasn't in scope. It's the same when you're writing maths, okay? Any variable you use has to have been introduced somewhere. I'll give you an example in a minute. You also know that your programs, especially in a language like Java or Haskell, your programs have to type check, okay? You wouldn't write, you know, 3+. Python might let you do all sorts of things, but if you write an integer plus a string, in a lot of languages that wouldn't be allowed. Even if it is allowed, you'd better know what you're doing if you want to write something like that. So things are better type check, and it's just the same in maths. And you can avoid an awful lot of writing nonsense just by applying what you're used to in computer science to writing maths. So, for example, as regards things being in scope, here's what the kinds of things people sometimes written when I ask them for the definition of big O. You see, they've written, there exists a C greater than naught. For all N greater than or equal to big N, there exists big N greater than naught. Well, that's wrong, because this big N here hasn't been introduced yet. It's this for it exists big N here that introduces big N into the game, and then once you're to the right of that exists big N, then big N is a thing you can talk about. Okay? So variables, don't use a variable that hasn't been introduced, as it were, further to the left in the formula or further up in the preceding text. So this here, big N, is out of scope. This is like using a variable that's not declared. Okay? If we've got a graph, this is a type-checking example, set of vertices, set of edges. What's an edge? Well, an edge is going to be a pair of vertices, okay? So, this is, I'm sure none of you do something quite as silly as this, but this is just the first example I can think of a non-type checking thing. So if X and Y are elements of this set, they're not of the right type to be the elements of this set. You might have brackets x comma y, pair comma y might be a thing that might be a candidate for this set. This isn't. So just think of you're writing a program and there's a whole body of research, a lot of it done in Edinburgh, on how in certain frameworks mathematical proofs can themselves be thought of as just programs of a certain kind, a certain type of theory. So the differences are maybe not as huge as you think. So you are an advantage coming from a programming background. You're very familiar with these concepts, and I would encourage you to think about these when writing maths. Okay, and just the last thing I'd want to say is just psychological. I probably didn't realise this when I was an undergraduate. I always thought the examiners were somehow trying to catch me out. They were trying to put obstacles in my path, and, you know, only grudgingly would they give me any marks for what I was doing if they really, really had to. That's not our basic disposition, I would say. Do you agree, Mary? Our basic disposition is we're looking for reasons to give you marks. We're looking for almost excuses. Oh, yeah, there's a bit of understanding of that there. Help us give you marks. That's a very good one. We're not basically looking for reasons to deprive you of marks. We might sometimes have to deprive you of marks, but I'd say our basic disposition is this first one. So I hope it helps you a bit just to know that. We are on your side. So we want you to do well. Doesn't reflect on us if we give you all well, if we do give you all low marks. So I hope that's helpful, and just to wish you all good luck. And
And we will probably do another of these around week 10 where we go to a paper, for example. But we wanted to give you a kind of an early start, kind of for anyone who needs to catch up on some stuff from semester one and wants to start thinking about writing this A4 sheet, maybe wants to go and do some revision now. Does anybody have questions?
Any other questions for either of us?
Yeah.
How long is the exam?
How long? It's 2 hours. Yeah, there is a thing to say about it. It's 2 hours. So in terms of time management, if you think of it as...
One way to think of it is if you allow yourself 10 minutes for overall familiarisation with the paper, just looking and seeing what's what, choosing your questions, okay? Then 10 minutes for each of the 5 part A questions, that would take you up to 1 hour, and that would leave you half an hour for each of your 2 selected part B questions. That's you know, you don't have to do that, but that's broadly a way of thinking about what the what your time budget might be. Yeah.
Another question here.
So
we're being asked whether the sheet we bring in has to be handwritten. I don't know the answer to that, so I tried to have a little look before it came down and I couldn't see it. We'll
ask around.
Check with the ITO to get
that's a good question. That's a good question.
I tried to find the answer just half an hour ago and it wasn't in any of the emails that have been sent out. So I need to
You did actually. There'll be colleagues who know that. Anything else? Okay. You're all looking pretty cool about this stuff. Then. Okay. That's good. It's like, you know, there will be a balance between just mechanically executing the algorithms we're talking about and, you know, reasoning about the algorithms informally and perhaps a little bit more formally. You know, we're not going to give you an entire exam of mathematical proofs, so if, you know, in terms of Mary's slide of the different levels you could get to, if you get about halfway down that, you'll be able to
strong.
You're strong, and you can fluently just
but mechanically but fluently execute all the algorithms in the course.
Do some of the runtime, then you're getting to a point where you've got to go to basis.
You'll get it, yeah. You'll get you'll pass from doing that. But if you want to get mark in the 70s or above, you know, try and get into the mathematical depths of it.
Yeah, that's something I'd add to John's thing when he says he must try all the questions. Is that sometimes things that when people measure how well they're doing on an exam, it sometimes feels to me like they're thinking, I've done this one and this one, and this sometimes comes up in prep, you know, I know 2/3 of the class, but not all of it, or 2/3 of the material. Putting aside the fact that we may not have an exact 2/3 on that, there's also the issue that if you're going with such a strategy, you're kind of assuming you'll be able to do all those 2/3 kind of perfectly. And that's not really true. So you need to factor that into your kind of understanding of how well prepared you are. It's not reasonable really to expect that you're going to hit every question out of the park. There's going to be a nuance in how strong your answers are. So you need to cover a good whack of the class, I think, of the course. Yeah.
Another question?
Don't do that.
The question is, can you attempt all three questions in part B? I think the current rules are, if you try that, it's the first two that get marked. The third one is discarded. So not a good strategy.
Yeah, and also just, if you're trying to get good, you need that half hour each, to be honest with you. So it's not a great use of your time either. So please don't do that.
If you attempt start attempting one of the part three questions, and then abort it.
If you realise, that was not a good idea, please cross it
out. Please very clearly cross it. That's worth it. Thank you for raising this. Very clearly cross it out, because otherwise you're in danger that one might get.
It counted, But if it's crossed out, we won't. Yeah.
If it's clear, yeah.
Thanks very much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Good to see you.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to see you.